Welcome to Conversations with Leaders, an AWS podcast focused on personal lessons of leadership, culture, and technology from business leaders across the globe. Enjoy today's conversation.
Hello, this is Tanuja Randeri, Managing Director, Europe, Middle East, and Africa for Amazon Web Services. Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Leaders. In this series, I will be speaking with CEOs from across the EMEA region about what it takes to transform business and society, how they are leveraging data and technology to accelerate growth and innovate, and their insights on topics such as sustainability and addressing the digital skills gap. We will also be providing a glimpse into the personalities behind some of our great leaders of industry. On today's Conversations with Leaders, we're diving into the intricate world of modern advertising with Mark Reed, CBE, the visionary CEO at the helm of WPP, the world's largest marketing and communications company. In an era where digital transformation is a business imperative for so many industries, Mark and WPP are leading the charge in reshaping their sector's landscape, from leveraging cutting-edge technologies to navigating the delicate balance between personalization and privacy. He's at the forefront of innovation, driving change that not only resonates across global markets, but also redefines how advertising works at a fundamental level. With a wealth of industry experience to draw on, he's been with WPP since 1989 and has seen and weathered some seismic disruptions in that time. Mark is also a trustee of the National History Museum and a huge advocate of sustainability and diversity. Mark, welcome to the show and thank you so much for giving us your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tanuja, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I can't wait to dive into some of your strategies and what you've been up to at WPP. But maybe just as an opening question, I was watching a fireside chat that you gave last year, and you mentioned your low boredom threshold. I love that turn of phrase. What impact has a low boredom threshold had actually on your career, and how does it manifest?
I can't believe I was that candid. It's obviously the danger of doing fireside chats. It means I can concentrate extremely well for short periods of time. I'm a natural multitasker, which are probably good attributes in a CEO. I think the thing that maybe makes it a bit more challenging is that, you know, leading a business, you have to have your eye on the short term, but you have to have your eye on the long term, don't you?
Well, you know, I think it's about like sort of the learn and be curious mindset. You know, it's like, you know, constantly having stimulation around us and then being able to pick up on it. And then the question of whether you react in the moment or you come back to it later, right? I think multitasking is a phenomenal skill in particular. And maybe I can ask a sort of a double click question on that. You said it's really important for a CEO in particular. What is it about the CEO role that requires such a sharp focus?
I think, you know, nothing kind of prepares you for the day you take over a company and all of a sudden you're kind of responsible in every way for what happens. And I think the realization is that you're suddenly like the chief salesperson for the organization, you know, internally for its strategy, but externally, not just with customers, but also, you know, if you're a public company, to investors as well. Suddenly you're accountable for many, many different things. And decisions come at you at a pace and speed that sort of hard to understand before you take on that role.
Yes, no, I can imagine. And it's been very interesting as we dive into your leadership style a little bit as you've taken on the role of CEO of WPP. Could I ask you, was there a crucible moment in your life, your career, that makes you the leader you are today?
No, I don't think there's any one thing. There's no one event that's, oh, I'm going to be the CEO of a company. I grew up, you know, my father was an entrepreneur, so I was kind of naturally attracted to business. I studied economics, which took me into the same direction. I ended up working in WPP 30 years ago. I did manage to sort of escape for 5 or 6 years in the meantime, which I think is important. You know, I went often as a management consultant, which I think was a thankless task. And then I started an internet business in the sort of 1999-2001 period when everything, you know, went amazingly well and then suddenly stopped, basically the day of the lastminute.com IPO, sort of a realization that maybe this shouldn't carry on. You know, then obviously over the next 10 years, actually the profound changes the internet made in business came back. So, you know, I've had, I think, the benefit of doing actually different things, you know, running a small business, running a large business, being a consultant. I probably enjoy leading a creative organization much more than I would have imagined, actually. I think there's something very special about WPP and our agencies and the work that we do with our clients and the role that we have that make it, you know, make the job more fun and more engaging and, you know, allow us to engage sort of different sides of our brain. You know, one day we're discussing, can we get Beyonce in a TV commercial? And the next we're looking at, you know, the application of technology and how we're going to deploy a piece of technology across the organization. So, you know, WPP has, you know, a wide variety of, you know, opportunities and challenges, I would say.
I really appreciate you sharing a little bit about your career, because I often talk to the next generation of leaders, let's say, and this idea of being able to pick up a lot of experiences along the way and working across geographies, working across sectors. I also started my career in consulting, actually, and I have to say that early training was really good. Did you always, I mean, because you said you had a plan to be a CEO, your father was an entrepreneur. I know you did a stint in the stock brokerage firm early on, but then you spent 30 years at WPP. How was that experience over the time that you were there? And did you ever feel like, I want to go and come back, which eventually you did, but how did you keep it fresh in terms of learning?
Yeah, I think I did sometime, I did like 4 years at WPP. I went to business school, which is a great experience. You know, you learn a lot and make sort of friends for life. And then ended up coming back to WPP for like 3 or 4 years. And then around, I guess, 95, so quite a long time ago now, I went to, you know, Booz Allen, a consulting firm, 4 years. And there, as you say, you do learn a lot, but you learn a lot because you're working 100 hours a week. And if you do 100 hours a week, if anything, you learn a lot. And I wanted to sort of scratch that entrepreneurial itch. I don't think I ever really had a plan to be a CEO. And I do admire, you know, people that have a plan for their career. I think actually if you overplan these things, it's not great. And if I went back to my 20s, probably I wish I could have taken, you know, a few more risks. Although I was very lucky with the experience I had when I started, I think, because I started at WPP, company clearly, it was an amazing role. It went into like crisis within a year. And, you know, in crises, you learn a lot. You know, we were nearly ran out of money. I was dealing with banks. I did investor relations at a time when the share price went from £7 to 30p. And you learn to put a lot of things in perspective when you go through that. And then you come out the other side and you see, well, actually, you know what? You know, business is cyclical and you can get through the other side of things. But I'd never really had a plan. Maybe I should have a plan. I think actually I ended up sort of in the center, in the sort of head office. I probably stayed there too long. You know, I did the strategy job and then the digital job and I ran a group of businesses. But looking back, you know, I could have moved out of that role earlier. But I wouldn't be doing my current job if I hadn't led Wunderman, you know, for 4 years before. And I think that you have to understand what people are looking for to put people in these jobs.
No, I think that's right. I think that P&L experience is so critical. I got my first shot at it having done so much. I was in strategy for so long, no one wanted to give me a P&L job, Mark.
So where did you go after strategy?
So after strategy, I joined EMC.
Right.
And they were actually one of my clients because I was at McKinsey. So it's a much easier landing, as you know. But I continue to do strategy for EMC and a lot of M&A, actually, like you. And then I moved to the UK and joined City of London Telecoms, also in a strategy, but this time taking on more of a transformation role, which started to get me into the execution of things. And then the CEO took a bet on me and sent me off to run the Benelux, and it changed my life. You know, that P&L experience completely does.
We hope you're enjoying this discussion. To engage with other business leaders on these topics, follow us on LinkedIn at AWS Executive Insights. Now back to our conversation.
And that, I think, is the challenge with consultants is, and by the way, the longer you stay as a consultant, the more you get paid, the bigger the job you want to do, the harder it is to actually to make that transition. So, and what, look, I think the great thing about the UK today is there's many, many more different types of opportunity and the whole growth of the startup ecosystem is so valuable at giving young people, people starting out in their careers, different types of opportunities. The creative economy, you know, has masses of different types of opportunities. And actually, just the creative economy, the ability for people to, you know, learn how to share content, whether that's on, you know, Instagram or TikTok or Twitch, you know, these people are trained at learning and training so many different types of skills. So I think there's lots of ways for people today to build different types of careers. As we get on to AI, I think we're going to need them.
We are actually, absolutely. We cannot possibly leave without talking about AI and particularly the approach that you're taking to this. But I'd love maybe for a moment to dive a bit deeper around the build better future pillars of your strategy. When I read it, and you know, it talks about build better futures for people, for planet, for clients and communities. Maybe if you could share a little bit to me, you know, what was the genesis of the build better future strategy, and how do you ensure that across, gosh, I think it's 100,000 plus employees across 100 plus countries, how do you ensure that the people at the coalface are absorbing this and actually putting it to use in their daily lives?
Yeah. And look, I think it's a task, and it's not made easier by the fact that WPP is a multi-branded business. So we have, you know, WPP is a company, but we're made up of brands from AKQA to Ogilvy to VML to Mindshare to Wavemaker. And so, you know, we looked for what made people in WPP, you know, common. So we have a set of common values: open, optimistic, extraordinary. But then we needed the company to have a purpose. And I think, you know, purpose has gone in and out of fashion over the last 5 years. I think it's probably a little bit more out of fashion than it was a year or two ago. But I don't think it's any less important for WPP. And, you know, we defined our purpose around, I guess, the four main ways in which we impact the world. You know, we employ 100,000 people. And so it's important that those people feel that, you know, they can build their careers in WPP, and we run a diverse, inclusive organization. Planet is next. And clearly we have an impact on the planet. We have to think about that and consider that, everything from single-use plastic to decarbonizing the business and the work that we do. Obviously, we work with clients, and clients, I think, want to work with companies that have a similar sense of purpose that they do. And there's many ways in which, through the work we do with clients, we can benefit the world and society, which might seem odd coming from someone from the advertising industry. But, you know, much of what we've done over the years has been around that, you know, from hand washing to toothbrushing to, you know, wearing seatbelts to drinking and driving. And then communities, because we live in communities, want those to be healthier. And I think, look, at the end of the day, it's about building a culture that attracts the best people to WPP. I think that's what matters. And there's some inherent contradictions in some elements of that purpose. But I think that just setting it out and being clear and being able to measure it, we have a sustainability committee where we look at what we're doing in a very detailed sustainability report. If I look back at the challenges we faced over the last 5 years as a company, and as society, you know, everything from COVID to the war in Ukraine to, you know, mental health crisis that certainly people talk a lot about in the UK, you know, lots of these things do touch people and do touch people at work. And so I think there's a role that we can play without, I'm not trying to be a politician or make politics, but we make decisions every day that have an impact. And I think we're just trying to say, let's help the world be better than it would be if we made a different decision. I think that's, it's not a lot more complicated than that.
And Mark, you know, it was wonderful to partner with you and your team. I remember us exchanging an email, I think it was around Christmas time, and we were talking about Ukraine and how important that was for you, not only personally, but obviously for the company as well and for us. And I think the joint work we've done together with our teams around some of the support has been phenomenal, by the way. And thank you for that partnership. It's so important that we leave the world a better place than we came into it. And I actually think, for me, tech for good has always been, at least the reason I came here, let's just say, you know, this late in my career. It's fabulous. And thank you, by the way, as well. I'm just amazed at the statistics in WPP around diversity and inclusion. I mean, 40% of executive leadership roles are filled by women, and you've won numerous workplace awards. I know you personally have won a number of awards as well. And the Heroes Champions list is a great one to be on. Always fabulous and a great inspiring group of people. The 40% is so much higher than we normally see. How were you able to get to that? How were you able to get the organization behind you on the diversity and inclusion journey?
It was much easier than it was challenging. I mean, at the end of the day, more than half our workforce are female, and actually more than half of our senior managers are women. So, you know, it shouldn't surprise us if, you know, 42, 43% of our executive leadership are women as well. And I think, you know, we've focused on it. There have been programs in place for a number of years that champion women in the workforce, and there's some around career development, some much, much more about sort of personal learning. We have a great program called Walk the Talk. We help women understand, in a way, what are the different challenges they face in the workforce, which they definitely do, and how to deal with those. And many hundreds of women from WPP have gone through that program. And I think it helps. I learned early on, someone explained to me in a way that I understood that there's sort of two elements of diversity. There's representation, you know, do you represent the society in which you work? And then belonging, do the people that work for you feel they belong in the company? And I think if you think about the problem through those two lenses, lots of what you do becomes a lot easier. So I'd say that ethnic diversity is more challenging for us, I would say. You know, we continue to invest more in that area. And I think we do it because, you know, talent is equally distributed around the world, particularly creative talent. And we want to have the most talented, creative people inside our organization. You know, I shouldn't really take any of the credit for it. I think a lot of it's the people. And when we've come to promote people, we found the best people in many cases were women. And that's fantastic.
I think that's marvelous. I love Walk the Talk, by the way, and I will definitely find out more about it because it might be interesting for us to emulate. I know that a lot of organizations start with a 50% plus pipeline, but they don't always end up there. So it's obviously very purposeful on your part and your teams. I do think having senior leaders who then are the role models that then are bringing in, you know, more diverse populations is phenomenal. And I think that's probably what makes the difference here, because you do see this leaky pipeline in most every other place, but sounds like you've actually been able to maintain that level of representation.
Yeah, well, it's still a bit leak, isn't it? We go from 50 plus to 40 plus. So I'm not saying we're perfect. We're not perfect. Some of the changes around flexible working have made it easier, but I wouldn't put it down to that. I just think we've got many talented women in our organization. And, you know, we studied the problem and the challenges and tried to have sort of plans that address it directly.
Yeah. And it's about inclusivity, as you said, and belonging. I think that does make a huge difference. Plus everything you're doing around planet and communities. I'm sure that resonates as well with your workforce.
Thanks for joining us for part one of this episode of Conversations with Leaders, brought to you by AWS Executive Insights. Join us tomorrow for part two. For more on these topics, visit aws.amazon.com/executive insights.